The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
ShotGlassDigital.com.
Rebel Force Radio presents...
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen.
This is Star Wars Rebels Declassified.
I like the sound of that.
A roundtable discussion about Star Wars Rebels.
Pretty gutsy move, kid.
I am the Inquisitor.
We're busted.
Chopper, get us out of here.
Now it's time for Star Wars Rebels Declassified.
All right, up to episode 10. We're in double digits already with Star Wars Rebels here in season 1. And an interesting episode. I would say a kind of a turning point in the show so far. Vision of Hope, written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Stephen G. Lee, be the official name. Originally aired, or to air, on February 2nd, 2015. But it's been with us for a little bit longer via on-demand channels since January 26th. And we got an intimate little group here to discuss this episode. Starting, first of all, with my good friend and yours from Chicago, buried under about a foot of snow, at least. Going to be more.
Enjoy some hot cocoa and talk about Rebels. Because that's really all I can do today. I am completely snowed in here. And it's a Sunday. We're actually releasing this show a little bit early. Why? Because, Jason, you're not going to be with us next week. And
I've got the day job is taking over my life here for a week. We've got a great show rolling into town. I hope they get in because of the weather. But we've got the revival of Pippin, which is one of my all-time favorite musicals. And so I'm really excited to have them in for a couple of weeks.
Great. So if you're in the Cleveland area, be sure to visit the Playhouse Square Theater and see Pippin and tell them Jason Swank sent you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
there's a few tickets left. Not a lot. Not a lot. So.
But here we are. You know, speaking of not a lot, there's not a lot of episodes left this season for Star Wars Rebels. And I can't believe we're actually already getting to a point where we're winding down season one. And that's pretty cool. But from things that Freddie Prinze Jr. has gone on the record saying, actually, he tweeted over the weekend that they have recorded double the amount of episodes for season two. So I'm sure we'll be able to get together on a lot of weekends. And when we get together on weekends to record these shows, we always have the opportunity to get Paul Bateman in the mix.
Yeah, we got Paul Bateman. Here he is from... the other side of the pond. I just had to say, you know, when I saw Freddie's tweet, Paul, I thought, geez, I just hope that second half of the season isn't going to be like, you know, Rebels, the Lost Missions. And they're going to be all, animatics and half-finished.
Or pencil sketches. Right. little cut-out paper things like South Park or something.
Yeah,
we figured we'd just save a little bit of money with the second half of the season. We thought, like, you know, Star Wars fans are loyal and they weren't.
Well, I mean, think of what the downloads they probably got on those unfinished episodes. They're like, what are we doing? What are we knocking ourselves out for?
Mm-hmm.
We can throw stick figures as long as it's canon. People want to watch it.
Yeah, should do like one of those sort of strange episodes, you know, like you get with a lot of science fiction shows where they suddenly kind of go out there and do like a stop motion episode or a puppet episode or something.
I would love that. You know, I would love to see them to do like a throwback where they give us a Rebels episode, but done in like Ewoks or droids style. One episode would be fun.
Or nothing but shadow puppets would be cool. Just shadow puppets.
Shadow puppets.
Yeah. I might even produce that.
Yeah. Or maybe they give us a whole show done with action figures.
Yeah, I think that's probably out there already, but I'd like a Muppet version. It would be great, I think.
Muppet version. Oh, that would be awesome. You know what? It's funny, Paul. You mentioned South Park, and I actually have South Park on my in my notes. I don't know if we've covered this, but is Chopper not the Kenny?
Oh yeah, we've talked about this.
We've talked about it, because I swear, yes. I swear, when those troopers approach him,
yeah.
He turns and drops.
Yeah, he's
three little words.
Even listen to Chopper.
WTF?
Yeah, you know, at the you hear that actually when you listen to our opening for this show, Chopper is the last voice you hear before we start up the show, Star Wars Rebels to Classify, and he says he does that. What the heck? And it's like, come on! I even have that written in my notes because, yeah, when he was. In this episode, Vision of Hope, when Chopper is dealing with those stormtroopers who approach him by that manhole cover, and I swear I am hearing things. I am interpreting what Chopper is saying, and I don't know why the troopers aren't, but I'm hearing them loud and clear.
Yeah, I've always said one of these days we're going to get a Blu-ray release of the movies where we have subtitles for R2-D2, and it's just going to be like 18 certificate. We're all things he's been calling 3PO for years,
right? We just don't
know. Yeah, and I'm sure I bet he does not worry about political correctness at all, and
I think
he hits below the belt way too often.
Yeah. I often think Chopper reminds me of the you know, the adult voices in Peanuts. Do you remember that?
Yeah, the teacher. The teacher in Troy, although who knows what those teachers now after South Park and hearing Chopper, I'm wondering what are those teachers saying?
Yeah.
You never know. But Jim, that's funny that you had that down too, because that just it jumped out at me. But I love it. And I still have the theory that I think you share it too, that Dave Filoni is doing the voice of Chopper.
Yeah, there's something mysterious about that Chopper voice. I don't know. Yeah. You really have to. We might have to take that into the sound lab and try to strip it down a little bit, see if we can actually decipher what's going on with Chopper.
You know, I'm finding, guys, when we have the discussions about Rebels, because it is so close in proximity in terms of the timeline to the original trilogy, and we're, of course, all three of us are sort of that OT generation. I find that more times than not, the conversation sort of blossoms into sort of a larger discussion about sort of what's going on and how it affects what we're about to see, more so than the Clone Wars. I felt like when we talked Clone Wars that we were really drilling down into the specifics of the episode, whereas with Rebels, I feel like it for some reason it lends itself to a much broader discussion. And the show title, Jim, the episode title, Vision of Hope, and the whole notion of there being hope in the galaxy for a restoration of freedom, it made me think, and I don't want to be too literal about it, but is it possible that by the time we get to episode 4, and it's called A New Hope, will we have seen what the old hope was?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I like how you place that. I mean, it's something, A New Hope, that can be applied in so many different ways when you think of the saga on a whole. I think it's really interesting, too, how you sort of compare the way we analyze this series compared to how we analyze the Clone Wars. And I mean, the Clone Wars, of course, was firmly entrenched between episodes 2 and 3. So we had those perfect bookends to work with. I think it's harder to find connections between episode 3 and episode 4 because you're dealing with maybe 2 decades worth of continuity to fill. And so anything could happen. And also it's uncharted territory, too. The dark times is traditionally a part of Star Wars history that has been mostly off limits over the years. You know, some comic books have gone into that territory and video games. But this is the first time we're really seeing hard canon being applied to those dark times. 5 years prior to A New Hope. So you're saying that Ezra could possibly be the first hope.
The first hope. Because what I'm wondering is there, and Paul, please feel free to jump in. It's just the three of us. So anything goes. Because I'm wondering if what we're seeing with Rebels, is there going to be a moment when this culminates into some sort of sacrifice to allow Luke to take his place as the new hope?
I like it. And I think... I was thinking along those lines the first time that we saw The first time Ezra got his lightsaber, you know, and he stood there with his lightsaber in the air, it reminded me of Ralph's kind of original kind of sketch of Luke Skywalker with his lightsaber inside a triangle. You know that artwork?
Oh, yeah.
And, I thought, like, yeah, they're making a really kind of clear statement about this kind of connects back to the OT. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went there at all. I mean, I think that's definitely the way forward. I mean, having seen that Lando episode, I mean, my interest in the show has suddenly kind of doubled. You know, kind of like, I really like the fact that they're prepared to go that far and bring in an OT character. And I think they should do a lot more of it. And I think the more connections we have that are significant rather than kind of throwaway, the better for me. I think, you know, it would be nice if, you know, I don't know, we maybe get a young Ackbar or a, you know, some of the kind of connection with the OT that we like, you know?
Absolutely. I think that they have, you know, I love the fact that, and I know that at times it's frustrated fans because, particularly during the Clone Wars, why aren't we seeing more legacy characters? And Dave Filoni is so protective, in a way, of those characters and wants to use them. And it wants to only use them if they're making a significant, if it's worth it, if they're making a significant contribution. So, Jim, I think the show is stronger because of the restraints that he puts on that. You know, if he's going to pull a character out of mothballs, it's going to matter.
Mon Mothma balls. sorry.
Mon Mothballs.
Mon Mothballs. Mon Mothballs, ladies and gentlemen. This episode of Rebel Force Radio's Star Wars Rebels Declassified is brought to you by Mon Mothballs. Put them in your closet. Hey, you know, yeah,
it keeps the Minox away.
Here's when we know. Here's when we know all bets are off. Uh-huh. Is if they finally bring Han Solo into an episode of Star Wars Rebels. He came close to being included into an episode of Clone Wars, much closer than a lot of people understand. And, you know, there's been certain clues thrown out there as to how far along they got in that process and which actors might have been considered for the role. And I'm going to keep that a mystery. But that's when I think that, you know, all bets are off. Sure, Chewie crossed over into the Clone Wars, and already in this series we've seen Lando, 3PO, R2. Who am I missing here?
Yoda, Ben, Vader.
Yoda, Ben, Vader. Ben. Oh, Ben was in it. Yeah, right. That's more Obi-Wan than Ben, I think.
Yeah. you know what? Once he leaves, though, once he gets on Tatooine, I consider him Ben.
He's all Ben. Mm-hmm.
He's all Ben.
He's 100%.
He's Ben, Jim.
He's Ben. Full on Ben. But I'll tell you, I always thought that in Spark of Rebellion, that message that's in the holocron was recorded before Yoda and Obi-Wan left the Jedi Temple in Revenge of the Sith. Remember, they showed Obi-Wan as he was kind of closing down that recording apparatus.
Yeah, I thought that doesn't Yoda give him orders to send it out?
Yeah.
And so I think you're right. I think that is the message that we never saw.
Right.
That was recorded during the final events of episode 3.
Exactly.
All right, so fine. He's Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Score one.
So should they finally bring over Han Solo, then, hey, who can forget we've seen Darth Vader in Rebels too. You did say Vader? Okay.
Yeah. Ben. I've got a list here. Yoda, Ben, hold on. Ben's wrong. Obi.
Yeah, change that.
Wan. So Yoda, Obi-Wan, Vader, Lando, R2, and 3PO. I don't think we're missing. Oh, Paul, are we missing anybody?
I don't think so.
Well,
my only kind of criteria is like, those characters are so strong. You know, I mean, my argument quite often when we were watching the Clone Wars was why are we getting an episode about three dustbins and a frog when we've had nothing to do with Yoda for seasons? You know, and it's like, I'm sorry, I don't care about that new little frog you've come up with. I'd rather see Yoda is in much.
You know, you're so right, because, you know, we would hear Dave talking about the fact that, you know, there's so many great characters fighting for screen time in this rich world. And it's like, yeah, but, you know, it'd be unfair to hold any one individual accountable. And I think George was driving the ship on that. I think George was trying to do, I think he was trying to combine both of his passions. He was combining his little art films that he said nobody would want to see with the Clone Wars at times.
Whoops.
Let's be honest, these are the episodes that nobody want to see, and we all love George, but it was George's fault. There's no doubt about that. I think everybody realizes it was definitely George's fault.
For sure. I think he was accountable for two. Look, he was accountable for a lot of great stuff, right? But I think the two things that I do think we can sort of lay the blame, if there is, on him in terms of Clone Wars, not to go down this rabbit trail too long, but is one, the lack of continuity from episode to episode, because I think George would say, hey, that episode about the that one clone trooper, let's go back and see what he was doing the day before. You know, so that you'd have that, and then you would have, you know, again, I think him trying to bring in some of these really, really bizarre concepts. It almost makes you wonder, fellas, this would be a great topic for one of those what if shows, but it almost makes you wonder, what if George would be a young filmmaker today and create Star Wars, the first Star Wars, with all the tools at the disposal of a storyteller today? I mean, would it have been as great? Was George's storytelling enhanced by the limitations?
Yes, it was. There's a series of lucky accidents and events that led to Star Wars being so amazing. But George didn't set out to create that. He had a different vision in mind as far as, I mean, you know, obviously he was restricted by the tools of the time. But, he always looked at it to be bigger than it was. And so he made those changes to it when appropriate. So we sort of do see a little bit of what George would do if he was making Star Wars with modern tools at his disposal when you look at things like the special edition. But now we're even looking at, you know, those films are 18 years old, and we know that he really pushed the envelope far with what they created as far as technique and technology for the prequels, right? So so I think what we'd be seeing is Ender's Game. It's, you know, that's what we'd be seeing George make if he made Star Wars today. More style than substance.
Mm. I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like it's one of those things where you can't make such a classic completely by accident. I mean, I'm sure, you know, a big chunk of it is absolutely George being a genius. And then the other, you know, magic dust was a combination of all the special people that he chose to put around him. And then also just, you know, the limitations of the time and, you know, meant that we ended up with what we did. Almost everybody kind of looks back on those films as perfection, even with the passage of time, you know. Sure, you can see the kind of the strange haircuts and all that, you know, but I think there's really nothing I would change about those old films.
What do you mean strange haircuts? He avoided fashion, Paul.
Yeah.
So that it would be timeless and not dated at all.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be the one saying, criticizing the haircuts either. You know? My hair is firmly rooted in the 70s, I think.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about, as we sort of narrow down our focus into this episode, there's one more kind of larger question I wanted to talk to you guys about. Which is visions. The idea of visions in Star Wars. We've seen them, you know, going back to perhaps the first one that we saw chronologically would be in The Empire Strikes Back when Luke is training on Dagobah, and we don't see the vision. We know he's having a vision of Han and Leia and Chewie and all of them on Cloud City, and that's when Yoda says, you know, always in motion is the future, difficult to see. And in some cases, we sort of just chalked it up to it being the cloud of the dark side that we heard about in the prequels. But I'm just wondering, is there more of a universal truth in Star Wars to where perhaps that seeing the future, you know, is not natural as we might hear? Is it about seeing the future and wanting to control it? Is it what is it about visions, the future, and Star Wars, and how it relates to this episode?
All right, I'd like to take this if I can, because I have a few thoughts on that. My first thought is not all Jedi can have these visions. Not all Jedi experience that. I think it was when Ahsoka was experiencing her visions regarding Zero the Hutt in the Clone Wars. It was hinted to us that not all Jedi have that ability to see things before they happen. They don't all get the visions. Of course, Qui-Gon Jinn says the ability to see things before they happen is a Jedi trait, but he doesn't say all Jedi have that ability.
Well, let me just ask a question, though. I think maybe, because I thought about that, too. He could see things before they happen. It's a Jedi skill or whatever. But is there a difference between knowing that a blaster bolt is coming milliseconds before it actually happens, and actually having a vision about a loved one dying, well, what they're going to die of. I don't think it's the same thing.
No, it's almost like comparing Spider-Man's Spidey sense to having a vision, being able to see the future. Spider-Man can't see the future, but he has the ability to have awareness about something happening moments before it happens, because things slow down for him. You know, things move a little more slowly for him, I always assume, like it would for a spider. I'll also argue that the first vision we saw in Star Wars was not in Empire Strikes Back, but it was at the moment Alderaan was destroyed and Obi-Wan had a little grabber there. I don't know if it was more of a vision or an emotional thing he was feeling.
I think it was that Jedi are so attuned to in Obi-Wan's case, I think the living force, he was so in touch with it that when that many life forms are extinguished and that quickly, especially when he was on his way there. Mm-hmm. So he was really in tune with it.
Okay.
That's what it was. I thought about that, Jim, but I don't know if that Paul will be the tiebreaker. Paul, vision or a feeling?
I think when they have, you know, I mean, for me, it just feels like, you know, they're choosing to go one way or the other with a plot, whether they kind of go for, oh, I can kind of feel something or have a full on vision. It's generally kind of like, it seems to me as though it's used as a device to sort of tell us whether a thing is important or not. You know, I mean, when you've got a story about kind of characters that are, you know, many, many characters who have essentially have superpowers, you know, it can kind of quickly become sort of normal, you know, that they do this. And when they want to sort of show us that there's a big event and kind of push into an area where it's a bit more mythic, then we start getting visions, don't we, where it's like, okay, now it's significant, you know. So I think it just sort of seems to me that you know, the only ever sort of use these kind of vision devices when it's like, you know, they're trying to tell us something is important and going to pan out along a long arc. So I think they're going somewhere with all these visions. I think it's going to.
Okay. So, Paul, you kind of have a little bit more of a kind of a pragmatic, hey, this is a storytelling device. I don't know that we can put handles around it.
I think, you know, for me, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody who wasn't a Jedi had a vision. But I mean, so far, we haven't had that.
Well, Jim, what do you think about the idea of seeing the future, whether it could be more of a dark side sort of thing to do? Because we're not supposed to interfere in the future.
Yeah.
Yoda says to Luke, you know, if you honor what they fight for, no, let it unfold. Let it happen.
Let's see. So the ability to see the future is a Jedi trait, to see things before they happen, if you want to be specific about it.
Yes, but Yoda, Anakin comes to Yoda in episode 3 and talks about visions. And it's yeah, visions.
Yeah.
Visions, you say. So, I mean, it's very obviously it's different than seeing things before they happen, which is how Jedi are able to survive in combat.
Yeah, so it goes back to more like a Spidey sense.
Yeah, right. I think Spidey sense would be the being able to dodge a blaster bullet.
Yes.
But having a full-on vision of someone dying or in pain.
The ability to see the future.
Right.
I mean, you're looking into the crystal ball, right?
Right. I just wonder if there's a danger, because every time it happens, they start to freak out. Because Kanan sort of freaks out when Ezra has this vision.
Because maybe the ability to have the vision is a Jedi trait, but to act upon that vision and try to change what you've seen or try to insert yourself into that situation, that might be considered a dark side thing or just something, you know, something unknown and uncontrollable.
Could be. I think Kanan, too, was hoping that Ezra's emotions in this case weren't going to force him to try to make something happen.
It all goes back to when you have Marty McFly bringing the book.
It all goes back to the future.
It does. Yeah. It does. When he brings that sports almanac back,
and
they decide to make bets on that. That's the dark side. Okay, just having the book is not the dark side. but to place bets on, it is.
Okay.
I'd go with that.
So the ability to do this is not bad, but but to interfere in a way, although it would take a very, very tough break. I don't even think Obi-Wan, as by the book as Obi-Wan was, if he had a vision that his, what was his squeeze name? Satine?
Yeah.
Saltine? What was it?
Saltine, yes.
That if he had a vision that she was going to be in mortal danger, I think that even he would act upon it. Only Yoda or Mace Windu would be so cold as to just sit by and let it happen.
Obi, leave my friends burning alive, Wan Kenobi.
Well, he does wince a little bit, Paul. He kind of looks away.
Oh, I can't bear to watch. Oh, dear. So loudly. Could you burn quieter, please? Why not scream so much? It's very disturbing.
I am very badly burned. Very much alive.
Yeah. It's just... You smell like toast.
Oh, man. Can you imagine the smell? Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. After sun, man, that's got to be strong stuff, isn't it?
Okay. Because anyway, I don't know. Jim, did you get all that off your chest about visions? I mean, it kind of went back and forth, but is there...
Yeah, I think we've pretty much exhausted that topic as far as I'm concerned. You know, the ability to have the vision is a trait of the Jedi. But I think that Yoda was letting Luke find out that acting upon that vision is not a good thing. So when it's revealed that Ezra has had such a powerful vision and Kanan realizes that, he allows Ezra to go out and, you know, try to insert himself into that vision, essentially. So I don't know if Kanan was being reluctant so much because he felt like Ezra would be drifting toward the dark side. Because Kanan was initially very skeptical that they would be walking into a trap. But Ezra felt otherwise because he was getting these clues that were telling him that things are going to play out a little bit differently. And so then Hera dispatched him to go find, you know, get some intel and find out if the Imperials are actually behind this whole setup, or if they're actually going to go out and try to capture this Senator Gul Travis.
Okay, so trust but verify. He had the vision, but they wanted to get some additional intel, as you say, to see what it was. And, you know, there's something about Paul, Ezra and his feelings about Travis. It's very interesting. I mean, Travis is obviously Ezra's hero. He's also... Is he not a kind of a link in a sense to his parents? I mean, he's sort of the symbol of what his parents allegedly died for. So there's something very personal about the way he looks to Travis.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of felt it. Firstly, I can't get past the fact that it's David Niven. And every time I look at this,
David Niven. Totally is David Niven.
Right? David Niven, but he sounds like Data. It's like, okay. But I mean, I kind of felt.
Was that Brent Spiner?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's right.
But I kind of feel as though it seems to me as though Ezra, you know, must have spent a lot of time on his own, and when Rebels first started, you know, you kind of got the impression that he was a bit of a loner, and probably didn't have an enormous number of friends. At least he didn't have a kind of a gang around him like he finishes up with on the Ghost. But initially, you kind of felt like he was, you know, shut away in that tower, kind of just, you know, doing his own thing, listening to the radio and what have you. So I imagine that Travis, as in Chris Travis. But
Star Wars artist, yes.
Yeah, right. But I think that maybe, Travis was probably kind of like a voice in the dark, you know, was somebody to kind of keep him company when it looked as though the Imperials had kind of taken over Lothal and there was nobody else to sort of, you know, to share his concerns with, you know. I mean, I imagine it kind of almost felt like he'd been listening to kind of pirate radio for a long, long time. And this was just a voice that would kind of, you know, speak out against the tyranny of the Empire and make him, give him some sort of comfort, you know, because I'm sure, I mean, he's always portrayed as kind of like an angry young man. And I imagine he's got a lot of stuff he wants to get off his chest. And it must have been very kind of comforting to have a voice like that, you know, kind of coming over the over the airwaves, kind of, you know, saying the same stuff that he was feeling, you know. Sure. So I think that's why he's so connected to him. I think that maybe, you know, lost his parents, and then that was probably the only voice he heard regularly for a long time, you know. Right. So that's what I thought about it. But
Jim, was it his? Could it have been his adoration, for lack of a better word, of Travis, that created that blind spot in his vision? He saw so much of what was to happen, except for Travis's betrayal.
Well, I don't know why he was putting so much faith in the Travis after the last experience the Rebels had using his intel and acting on it. It was in the episode Rise of the Old Masters, when they saw that transmission from Travis, and Travis revealed that Luminara Ndoli was being imprisoned.
I totally forgot right. about that. And, that's right.
And they clearly walked into a trap in that situation. The Inquisitor was waiting for them. So right. why didn't they put two and two together and say, hey, this guy, we were set up because of the information we got from this guy. Maybe Kanan did. Maybe Kanan was skeptical. And maybe Ezra didn't see it. Maybe he was blinded by that because he is still a kid and very impressionable.
Well, and Hera was also a huge Travis fan.
Yes.
As a result of her relationship with Fulcrum. But that's really interesting. Not only why didn't they put two and two together there, but we learn in the episode that he's being used as a double agent. Like he's like flypaper. You know, they put him on a system where they know that there's insurgency. The insurgents come to meet him. He gives up their names. And if they're, as he said, if they're real troublemakers, then they all meet with accidents. But isn't there a pattern here? Like every time this guy visits our world. But that leads me to believe and wonder that the pockets of resistance are not connected yet. They're all very individual on systems, and without a Travis or maybe a Fulcrum, there's little to no communication between them.
Oh, it's so obvious, because when Travis was on the run with Kanan and Hera, he was trying to get information from them. And he seemed very surprised when Ezra revealed that they were not part of a larger syndicate. They weren't just... They were a very small pocket of resistance, just them. And it's impressive all the damage they've done and all the mayhem they have brought upon the Empire, just the five of them, or six of them if you count Chopper. And so Travis seemed, you know, taken aback by that. Oh, my God, just you guys. And so he saw his opportunity right there. He was going to kill them. I hope I'm not jumping too far ahead. I don't think it matters.
No. It's
but when they were, you know, when they were.
We assume everybody's watched the episode.
Yeah. He was going to kill them because, I mean, if it's just them, just wipe them out and be done with it. He didn't need to get more information.
He was very reluctant, though. You know, he was such a worm.
Oh, it was.
Like,
I mean,
Hera was practically on top of him before he had the guts to pull the trigger.
Yeah, he is a worm, and he's out of shape. That we knew that from him running around in the sewer tunnel. he was having trouble catching his breath, and that was a big clue too. Hey,
but that was also his stalling, right?
Well,
to give time for Kallus to catch up.
It may have been, or he really was out of breath because he's not used to that sort of activity. And Kanan called him out on it. And he said, "Well, this is as close as I've ever gotten to being caught." But right. I mean, so I guess I can buy that. You know, he's a pampered senatorial type who doesn't get out in the action too much, even though he is this rebel. I could still buy his excuse. I mean, he's not a rebel. He's being presented as a rebel. So that's his cover story. But I never bought it for a second that this guy was on the side of good just because of that first experience we had with him in Rise of the Old Masters.
Wow, that is... Oh. Very intuitive, Jimmy Mack. I did not put that together. That's very, very interesting. So he was suspect too from the beginning. Of course, his behavior, the way they animated him, and as Paul puts it, you know, pointed out, he's modeled after David Niven and you know, kind of a very shifty kind of character. But I mean, from the moment we laid eyes on him, when he was not just a disembodied holographic voice, I realize there's something not right. And they did a great job kind of with Hera's facial expressions too, as she was reacting to a lot of the kind of the weird stuff that he was doing. And, you know, she once again, this episode kind of confirms about how she's really sort of the true believer. I mean, she's the, I don't want to say she's not naive. That's not the word I'm looking for, but she is the one that's really holding out for hope. I think Kanan is much more, given his background, is much more cynical, maybe even less optimistic. He even jokes at one point in the episode, "Hey, I'm trying to be optimistic like you guys." Mm-hmm. But at any rate, I thought it was definitely worth pointing out. Now,
the thing that Hera has that probably gives her that sense of optimism more than the others is she has this relationship with this Fulcrum character, who we don't really know how that character fits into the grand scheme of things. Is this character going to be a leader that's going to bring together all these different rebellious pockets of resistance and make it into a larger machine? Or
alliance?
Exactly.
We have not seen an alliance.
No,
not of
at
the
all.
Rebels.
Yeah. We've been getting little pieces of the puzzle. Travis himself could have been considered a piece of that puzzle. We know that Bail Organa is aware of what the Rebels are up to on Lothal. We also know that they have this contact called Fulcrum. So now Travis has been taken out of the equation. So it'll be interesting to see which other pockets of resistance get added to their contact list on their iPhones.
Well, I mean, I guess we can assume that Hera is going to go to Fulcrum and say, "Hey, Travis is a traitor," and then Fulcrum can put the word out. So I guess they've lost one of their biggest weapons against the insurgents.
Hey, Paul, oddly enough, Fulcrum is the one who was feeding Hera some information about Travis as well. Isn't Fulcrum the one who made Hera aware of the fact that he puts subtle hints in his transmissions when he's addressing specific planets, giving them hints on where to meet up? That's part of the thing, right? So this makes me suspicious of Fulcrum. If Fulcrum is feeding...
I thought that too, but I think that's going too far.
Why?
I think Fulcrum would be just as surprised.
Guilt by association.
Yeah, I know, but then they're gonna lose the only connective piece to all of these rebel groups. I think Fulcrum is gonna turn out to be what pulls these disparate groups together into an alliance. I think that's what's going to happen. But I thought about that. Paul, what do you think? Does this incriminate Fulcrum, or is there a world that exists where Fulcrum is just a victim like anybody else?
Yeah, I'd like to hear what Paul thinks, because Paul knows a lot about guilt by association just by being on this show.
yeah, totally. Well, I think, firstly, I kind of smelt a rat when it came to Travis anyway. It wasn't so much that... the previous episode where they were caught by the bad guys and everything, because I just kind of assumed that was the bad guys tapping into the feed and being aware of what was going on, but keeping quiet about it to lure them in, you know. But what did make me smell a rat was the fact that initially when we saw him, we didn't see a proper hologram of him sort of speaking. We just saw a picture. So to me, it sort of seemed like the Empire had just got hold of a picture of David Niven and someone was just, you know, making a broadcast. And they thought, like, well, this is a picture of somebody that's really wholesome and safe. And, you know, that'll lure a few people in. So I smelt a rat, because that just sort of seemed odd, because normally, you know, they don't broadcast a picture. It's normally kind of somebody speaking. And especially if he's not kind of trying to conceal his identity or anything. But by the time this kind of came around, I felt as though Hera, you know, rather than more than anything, I think that she just, you know, she seems to be kind of like the optimism, the sort of positivity in this show, in terms of, like, you know, sort of having faith in everybody and trying to be kind of like quite parental over everybody. So it doesn't come as a big surprise that she would want to be trusting. But I don't think Hera's, you know, stupid or anything. I think that she has a nature that's very kind of, she wants to think the best in people. But at the same time, it's clear that she's kind of like really clever, because she really kind of was the one who first understood that, hey, this guy's not to be trusted, you know, and that's why he was firing blanks and all that. But when it comes to Fulcrum, I mean, I I can't help but sort of run away with this stuff sometimes. And you know, we're well aware of the fact that when Disney did the whole buyout, you know, of Lucasfilm, they bought a lot of stuff. And we are starting to get little glimpses of things that we're familiar with, kind of transformed, you know, sort of designs that look familiar, but that they were for something else, or, you know, names sort of turning up that sort of seem familiar, but they're from something else. It's probably unlikely. I think that Fulcrum may turn out to be Starkiller. I think like a reinterpretation of the Force Unleashed guy.
No way.
I think that I could see that happening. I could honestly see like an animated version of Sam turning up in this show and kind of being the guy that actually started the Rebel Alliance, you know, but like
a little homage, but a reinvention of that. Yeah.
Because I mean, they could conceivably kind of carry on side by side. There is a way to make that work. I mean, you could definitely jerry rig it and have, you know, it kind of, it's enriching too, the idea that, you know, the Starkiller story may be going off behind the scenes, because it's not like we're spending time with Vader yet, you know. So I think it would be cool. I mean, I don't know how likely that is, but I would love that to be the case. I'd love Starkiller to turn up and be the power behind the Rebels. I mean, I kind of feel like this show definitely needs to go into that area. I mean, one of the reasons I was so happy about Lando turning up was like his character of note and importance, you know, whereas clearly a lot of the characters in Rebels probably in the end, certainly by the original trilogy generation, don't really carry a lot of weight. They're either in hiding or they're dead, let's face it. You know, so for me, it's kind of important that they kind of start playing in the areas that are a little bit less secondary. You know, at the minute, Rebels, although I absolutely love it, I think it's a great little show, it still feels very small to me, you know, and although I realise they're restricted by the cost of kind of, you know, making things too epic, and it isn't necessarily what we're, you know, you get your value from the show anyway. You don't necessarily want to see 1,000 starships kind of shooting at each other, but you know, it's all about character and kind of very, the intimacy is quite refreshing and nice to kind of go there. But I do sort of feel like the bigger picture needs to factor more into the show. And I really hope that in the second season, we start to get kind of like more significant characters kind of turning up. So for me, Fulcrum, it would be great if it was somebody like Starkiller that we haven't, you know, they haven't really experimented with. It'd be great if it turned out to be somebody like Ahsoka too, you know, because
I was just going to mention that, you know, as much as we love to assume that those of you listening to this show have listened to every episode, we know that there are some, obviously a lot, that haven't listened to previous episodes. And that is a theory that was posited here on the program, is that Fulcrum could be Ahsoka. In fact, Jim, I believe you did some audio manipulation, and it's not too much of a leap, right? That
it could be
Ashley Eckstein.
Oh, no, not at all. As a matter of fact, let me try to dig up that piece of audio. And
While Jimmy's doing that, Paul, I want you to finish your thought. So when you talk about how the need for this show to expand, I mean, do you kind of visualize, like, let's say we're 5 years from now and you get your wish and we're looking back on this series. Do you see this as like, oh, yeah, season one, they were on Lothal. And then by the middle of season two, you know, they were world hopping and all that. Is that kind of how you see it? You need more of that, or
I imagine if they're going to keep the budget down, I don't imagine that's ever going to be. It's never going to be kind of planet hopping. I wouldn't imagine to the degree that we'd all like it to be. I mean, I think that's probably unlikely. But it's more about the location being significant. I mean, for me, although I like Lothal, and it was interesting to see like the city from a higher vantage point this time, because it seemed much faster than I thought it was. I mean, although we've seen that horizon shot of Lothal, you know, from a distance, and you know, it looks just like Ralph's painting. Today this episode we saw it from very high up, and it seemed enormous. I mean, it looked like Coruscant. So it was like, you know, this is a much bigger place than I really kind of understood it to be. But I don't know. It's more about, you know, significance in the greater story. I just like it. I'd like to see the Calamari come into it. I'd like to see, you know, Mon Mothma and the other characters that are kind of, we've already established as being important in the, you know, the formation of the Rebel Alliance and what have you. And I don't think we can kind of really brush those under the carpet. I think if you've got a show called Rebels, it should be about, like, the really significant rebels. And I know that these guys are kind of like, you know, part of the message of Star Wars is that the little guy can be as significant as the big name, you know. But for my money, it's like, well, that's all well and good, but I want to see stories that are playing with the larger characters, the more important characters, rather than the kind of secondary ancillary characters. And at the minute, all the cast of Rebels feels like secondary characters to me at the moment, which is I love them. They're not Yoda, they're not Obi-Wan, they're not Anakin.
Maybe they're the old hope.
Yeah, I mean, that's new. So, I mean, I'm probably not being very fair to them, but it's just, you know, I don't know. To me, it's like I kind of feel like I'd like a greater connection to the original, you know, our original kind of version of Rebels.
Yeah, I just can't help but get the idea out of my head that, and maybe it's, I don't know if I feel it's necessary or if it's just a concept that I particularly like, but the idea that there's going to be some sort of joint sacrifice in order to give Luke and the rebels that we meet in, you know, the original trilogy, the ability to step forward in some way.
Oh my God.
Could you imagine if the entire crew just perishes on the Ghost in the last episode? That's the last image we're left with seeing.
Right. They go right into a Star Destroyer that's heading towards Tatooine to look for this force-sensitive child on this moisture farm.
Yes. And then the screen goes black. And then they start playing Journey's
Don't Stop Believing.
Don't Stop Believing, like The Last Sopranos.
Yes. Hey, by the way, I've got the Fulcrum clips, if you don't have them. I've got them all here.
Oh, let's hear number two is
number
the one we're
two.
Looking for.
Okay.
This is where you hear gradual pitch changes, and you'll notice that the voice is number one. I think we can determine the voice is a female. And the very last pitch change does, it sounds a little bit like Ashley Eckstein.
Welcome to Ghost. Docking complete. Heading to the airlock now. Welcome to Ghost. Docking complete. Heading to the airlock now.
It does. So anyway, that was shared in a previous episode, and wanted to bring that up because Fulcrum does. Now, Jim, it's interesting. I mean, you say that this whole turn of events with Travis could potentially incriminate Fulcrum. I don't quite see it that way. I think Fulcrum could very well have been being used by the Empire and by Travis. Speaking of the Empire, something that we kind of saw for the first time was a little bit of a irritation that Callus has with the Inquisitor. He feels, you know, it's Callus's mandate to hunt down and destroy these rebels, whereas it's the Inquisitor's mandate to hunt down and destroy potential Jedi, old Jedi, new Jedi, whatever. And the two are, it seems like, a little at odds. You know, they're both fighting for resources from the Empire. And, Jim, it looks like Callus is, you know, saying, hey, you know what? Let me do this, because if we find my rebels, we'll find his Jedi.
Yes, that's exactly what he says. That's his way of managing upward and trying to cover his butt. You know, he's going to give his supervisor what he wants, but he's not going to sacrifice the bigger picture. And to Callus, the bigger picture is clearly capturing the rebels and putting an end to the insurgency. And he feels the Inquisitor is being a little bit distracted by the Jedi, but he doesn't understand the Inquisitor's mission, given to him by Darth Vader, is to find the children of the Jedi and the Jedi that are with them, and try to turn the children, which would be Ezra and or Padawan Jabba, as the case may be,
yeah.
If you are Callus.
What was with that? What was with the Padawan Jabba comment?
I didn't really give myself the time to go back and look at the older episodes, but the first time Callus met Ezra, Ezra said his name was Jabba the Hutt.
Oh, that's right. Okay. All right.
And it was one of the earlier episodes, but it was definitely the first time that Callus and Ezra met.
Well, I gotta hand it to these guys. I love, after watching, you know, 5 years of the Clone Wars, I love the fact that these episodes tie in together so well, so neatly. Even an allusion to that little joke. Great job.
Yeah, and it's funny to see that Callus took it seriously too. He didn't think it was a joke. He obviously doesn't realize who Jabba the Hutt is. But yeah, you're right, Jason. And that was good to pick up on that. He revealed that in dialogue with Tua, Minister Tua, in his office. Did you notice how much the Imperial Complex represents and looks like the Senate building from Coruscant? I know it's based on an old Ralph design for the Death Star. But they kind of chopped it in half and made it into a domed building like we see on Coruscant. And Kallus's office is definitely like Palpatine's in the prequels. Even that scene when Tua walks in reminded me a lot of that scene when Mace Windu and I think it was Anakin walked in and Palpatine is looking at that hologram readout in his office, and he immediately turns it off when Anakin walks in.
I think it's Mace, isn't it?
Was it Mace? Is it that moment when they come in to arrest him?
I can't remember.
And so that's what he's looking at, that big hologram thing. But I like how Kallus doesn't turn it off right away, and he continues to have the conversation. Of course, his back is not to the door at that moment. But I definitely felt like the sort of architecture of the building and the environment of that office was definitely like Palpatine's, except it just wasn't red. So you see, there's some, as much as the emphasis is being placed on Ralph McQuarrie redesigns for the original trilogy, we do see some subtle nods to prequel trilogy design in Rebels, which is great because that provides that bridge between the two trilogies.
Yeah, they do such a good job, Paul. And I mean, again, this is there are very few people who are as steeped in Ralph's work and as familiar of it and speak the language as you do. But for me, there are so many times where I'm watching this show and I go, wait a minute, I feel like I've seen that before. Have I seen that before? You know, because growing up and getting the behind the scenes books and the magazines and all that stuff, you see so much of that. In particular, the one that jumps out at me is when we see the precursor to the Imperial shuttle come up behind that bridge as they're all running. And I was like, I feel like I've seen that before. Was that an early concept for the Imperial shuttle?
I think so much stuff in this is just proto concepts. I mean, I loved seeing the protocol kind of guard droids that were based on Ralph's early concepts, and it was nice to see a very literal kind of painting of Lothal behind Travis's head when they first kind of hooked up with him. I mean, it was just literally exactly the same as Ralph's original concept painting, but extended and had extra bits added to it and what have you. So. Yeah, I absolutely love all that. I mean, that's you know, if they're going to stay in one place, which clearly it's, you know, it's a cost kind of decision to keep it, you know, in one location, you know, they can't go wrong with kind of like sticking to Ralphie designs, you know, so I can't get enough of it. It's fantastic to see. It was nice to see the one of Ralph's early concepts for Jabba turn up in the episode the other week as well. The villain who was kind of dealing with Lando and what have you. That was nice. Well, they gave him a paint job, didn't they, and made him bright red. So,
right.
Did you guys kind of feel like, you know, when they were running through all the tunnels and stuff, it really felt like the old Dark Forces 2 game, you know, Jedi Knight?
When they got to the fan, I was thinking the exact same thing. I've been here before.
Yeah, right. I mean, I was thinking like, that's going to move up and you just got to wait 10 minutes for it to.
Dark Forces. God, that's so great you say that, Paul. I was thinking the exact same thing.
I mean, it wasn't as big, but it was cool. Yeah, I liked all that. Yeah, that was nice.
Hey, I also like the way go ahead, Jim.
I just want to throw this out there because there's so much talk about how Ralph's concept art is finding life in this show. I also wonder if some of the original concepts for script and plot will also be included in this show. Like, might we see things taken from the rough draft or the second draft and incorporated into this show? Because some of that stuff is sort of considered, you know, maybe a loose history of events that could have happened prior to A New Hope. If you want to start thinking about the original drafts that Lucas did for Star Wars, and those can be found online. Pretty easily. Just do a Google search if you've never read them before. They're all pretty cool. And, of course, Dark Horse did that miniseries, The Star Wars, based on the rough draft. I'm just wondering if any of that stuff could be actually incorporated, made canon via Rebels, much like Ralph's concept art is. Could we see original concepts for plot being included somehow? Would you be into that?
I think so, as long as it's good stuff. I mean, I'm really the character that I'm really looking forward to in seeing in this at this time is Palpatine. I've always been fascinated by that sort of that prelude to the novelization of A New Hope about how, you know, he was this, you know, kind of, I don't know if they say beloved, but he was this, you know, loved political figure that just over time grew more and more isolated. And I kind of thought in looking at that, like, that's kind of the spin. That's obviously not the reality of what's going on. But I would just love to see what's happening in worlds that are loyal to the Empire and just how Palpatine's being perceived. What's he doing? Is he just walking around in that black robe all the time? Is he still trying to, you know, keep up appearances at all?
No. He closes himself off. He shuts himself off from.
Is he embarrassed of the wrinkles? Is that what it is?
Well, that could. You know what? That could be an excuse because he does. You know, he does make reference to that when he is assuming the role of Emperor in Revenge of the Sith, scarred and deformed. You know, he's letting the public know. He's letting the public know he's a little bummed and depressed about his current situation as far
but his resolve has never been stronger.
Yeah, I mean, we've got over here, we've got plenty of politicians at our faces that look like cauliflower. So I don't really see it as an obstacle to.
You know, this is going to sound terrible, but every time I see like a collage of images of, you know, and it's generally not the big national figures, but, you know, like when your local elections come up and you get that postcard in the mail that has like 9-10 pictures of them, you're like, God, is this really the best we can do?
Yeah, Frank Palpatine.
Frank Palpatine. All right. Real quick, before we wrap things up, I want to ask some speculation for the future. Ask both you guys. Will someone pick up the Travis mantle? Who is going to be, or where will this fall in terms of being the de facto voice of the opposition?
I don't see too many people really lining up for that job. Obviously, there haven't been anything going on, and this is what Data Niven said in – I'm sorry, not David Niven. Gil Travis. Is his name Gil or Gull?
Data Nivens. That's
Data
awesome.
Niven. Data Niven. He does reveal, you know, they haven't had rebellious transmission since the Bridger transmission. So he puts two and two together. He's able to identify that that's Ezra Bridger. But he says they're gone. That still does not really solidify the fate of Ezra's parents in my mind. They keep leaving it open that his parents are still alive, possibly imprisoned. You could say they're gone, but I mean, it doesn't mean they're dead. And nobody's ever really been able to confirm what happened to Ezra's parents. I'm holding out hope that they are alive. But you see that they were persecuted because of the fact that they were transmitting all this anti-imperial stuff. And so I think people are like, they're the example, you know, and nobody wants to cross that line anymore. You know, Travis acted like he was transmitting rebel propaganda, but he wasn't, and nobody else has picked that up. So
here's a thought.
I don't think there's what I'm saying, though, is I don't think there's going to be another public voice like that in the show.
Okay.
Here's a thought. What if we've got Ezra here. We've got, you know, we've got a character who clearly remembers his parents, what have you, but they vanished. I mean, it does make me wonder if those characters could be sort of could show up later on, you know, as masked characters, you know, if they could kind of turn out to be somebody that we know from the OT or characters that, you know, we're familiar with, but not without a helmet, you know. I'm not sure who, though. It couldn't be Boba Fett.
I think his mom is Zuckus. I think that's Mrs. Bridger. We'll find out.
It was IG-88 after a big diet. It went on the Atkins diet, and he's never been the same since.
Right. Take that, Anthony Daniels. I can fit into this.
Check this out.
Yeah. Wow.
We don't know what happened to Boosh, the original Boosh.
About a other day, Boosh.
I don't know. I'd love them to sort of fold it into something that's more, you know, more clearly established. I mean, it's like, you know, you hear fans kind of saying, you know, bring more Jade in or bring, you know, this character or that character. I think that kind of thing would be I think that kind of thing would be mistaken too much, really. You know, although, you know, that's with me saying I'd like to see Starkiller turn up because that's something that I like, you know. Mm. But I think it is nice to get your geek on, I think, when they do bring in smaller elements, you know, like kind of species that you've only seen in a game. That's already happened, you know, in the Clone Wars. Or, you know, we've never seen the Bothans, you know, like outside of the EU. It would be nice to see something that was kind of, okay, now it's in Rebels, this is officially what a Bothan looks like. You know, it'd be cool to see a few Bothans turn up, you know, and obviously being as it's the Rebel Alliance and a few Bothans died, you would think that eventually we're going to get to that. But, you know, anyway, any shape it takes. I think that the broadcast thing, I think especially being as, you know, this guy was kind of fake and all that, I think nobody's going to be in a rush to kind of pick up that mantle, but it would be nice to sort of like feel that we're going to start getting some more significant kind of, you know, Rebel characters kind of turning up, because I just don't feel like these characters are going to be I don't know, I mean maybe I'm getting completely the wrong impression, but I just don't feel like any of these characters are going to be kind of, you know, on the bridge of a Calamari cruiser calling the shots. I feel like all these characters are going to remain, you know, sort of small characters on a little ship, you know, and kind of keep that sort of familial small kind of vibe, you know. I mean can you guys kind of imagine any of these kind of filling the shoes of a Luke Skywalker or a, you know?
Well, I don't know that that's their role. I think that we're supposed to witness an evolution in a sense, and these guys are the prototypes, or, you know, for lack of a better term, you know what I'm saying?
The beginning, the seed. Or...
Yeah, exactly. And so what we see in the Rebels, you know, in the ranks of the Rebels over the course of 5 years, what have you, is very different. But I think that they're very heroic. I think that there's a lot. I think there's a lot of substance to these characters, and by the end of the series, we may look back and we may say, in some ways, that they're more substantive than a Neenum.
Are you guys kind of feeling a strong connection with any character? Yeah, are you feeling like really kind of close to a character? Or?
I'm feeling actually quite familial with the whole crew. I love watching them, their chemistry. The one thing that, and I mentioned this on the last show and perhaps others, is that just impresses me more and more is the humor. I just adore the way they write these characters. I thought the whole little back and forth between Ezra and the names are still not on the tip of my tongue yet.
Sabine,
thank you. You know how I smell, and you know, hey, you know, you can think of a witty comment, you know, later. To me, it's so A New Hope. It's so that great witty dialogue between all of them. I'm digging it. I'm finding myself very close to him. I love Zeb. I love that little moment when Zeb smacks Ezra on the back and goes, "Hey, you're a Jedi. You should have seen this coming." And he's like, "It doesn't work that way." I mean, I love all those little moments. They're doing it so well.
I think what it is for me is it's not that I find that there's anything wrong with the development. It's more subjectively. I kind of feel like these guys are kind of, at the moment, they're remaining small fry, in as much as I kind of feel like they're just a small gang of people who are, you know, very, you know, they're based very locally, and their concerns, although, you know, they kind of will impact on the rest of the universe, they all feel very kind of small town, you know, small kind of universe, not a lot kind of, not very impactful, you know, whereas the kind of adventures of Luke and all that gang, they felt so far reaching and it felt so kind of enormous, you know, and I'm kind of missing that scope, I have to admit, you know, although characters, I mean, I love the bit with Chopper pushing the other droid down the hole and everything, that was great fun, and you know, he's starting to kind of feel like something very different from R2, even though, you know, initially I kind of felt like, oh, it's going to be kind of just an R2 clone, you know. But he feels a little bit more psychotic than R2-D2.
he's like R2 unhinged, you know, yes, unchained.
Kill people every week. It's like, I mean, how they keep him, it's like, crikey, if you had a car that just tried to shut the door in your face every time you got out, you'd be like, yeah, get rid of the car.
That's true. Yeah, I know. I love that they're similar in some ways, but he's sort of an extreme version. I think that's a lot of fun. But I would say that it's just, at this point, it's not the mandate of the show. I think that's why, that's, if we look at this, we can't look at this in isolation, because we know, with the way that the Marvel Universe is being treated by Disney, that the, you know, it's like the people that are frustrated with the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series.
Yeah.
It's not as far reaching as an Avengers movie or a standalone feature film of a of a character. So perhaps, you know, Rebels is Rebels' mandate is not to to be that. That's what the standalone films and the enumerated films are going to be.
However, I have to say that's probably the worst example you could give me because I hate S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. I would expect you to not like it based on some of the feedback I'm hearing here.
It's like, for me, it's like, take something that's really fantastic, like, you know, stuff that we all love about superheroes and all that, and let's make a show about the accountant in the background of this. And let's not put any superheroes in it unless they do superheroes. So I kind of just, yeah. And so for me, this could be that way, but for the fact that, you know, I'm enjoying the intimacy of it and I like the characters, but yeah. I'm really craving a larger tableau. And for me, it was like when I initially read the kind of description about Clone Wars, you know, and all that, I have to admit I was as cynical as anybody could be about having a 13-year-old girl as the lead character. And then, you know, Dave and his team painted such a wonderful, you know, believable, likable character that in a matter of weeks, I thought Ahsoka's, you know, as important to me as any other Star Wars character that there was, you know. So
absolutely.
For me,
I remember, Paul, virtually every roundtable we would have you on for Clone Wars, if Ahsoka wasn't in it, you know, you'd always at some point we'd hear Paul like, you know, where was Ahsoka in this? You know, he would always break out asking, where's Ahsoka? So you were a big fan.
Yeah, so I was kind of expecting to feel that way about one of the characters in Rebels, and so far I don't, you know. I enjoy Zeb, I enjoy his personality, and I like Chopper, but the rest I'm kind of...
lukewarm.
Moment. Yeah, really lukewarm.
All right, that's going to wrap up our discussion of this episode of Star Wars Rebels, Episode 10, Vision of Hope. This was a really good time. Thank you guys so much for being here. Big thanks to those of you listening. We love breaking it all down for you, and we hope that you enjoy it. And if you've got some feedback, of course, you can email us, show at rebelforceradio.com, and our Facebook page at facebook.com/rebelforceradio. Leave us a comment. And please consider subscribing if you haven't to the show in iTunes or in your podcatcher of choice. Reviews are also appreciated. Paul, thank you so much, my friend. Always great to get your insight.
It's nice to be here, guys, and it's cool to talk about the show. And I hope I didn't come down too much as a Debbie Downer. But, you know, I've got huge optimism for this show, and I think it deserves to... you know, be a bigger story. And I'm sure that Dave's got a few tricks up his sleeve. And
Paul, you're just keeping it real, man. I know. Just keeping it real.
I'm just looking forward to it getting bigger and, you know, expanding the coolness. We
appreciate it very much. If you want to follow Paul's exploits online, you can do so. He's on Facebook and also you're on Twitter, aren't you, Paul?
Sure am. Yep. It's Paul RMQ on Twitter.
There you go. Follow Paul. Jimmy Mack, final thoughts, Vision of Hope.
All right, Jason. Help if I turn my microphone on. Final thoughts on Vision of Hope. I really enjoyed this episode quite a good bit. It included a lot of good action, a lot of good character development, and we finally got to learn more about this mysterious senator, Travis, a.k.a. Data Niven. He definitely his true stripes were revealed, and I'm curious to see if there's going to be more interaction with this guy. Now that his front has been removed, and now we know what his true intentions are we going to be seeing him return in a much more evil sort of fashion? Will we see this guy kind of grow into what we see from Imperial officers in the original trilogy, guys like Tarkin, you know, cold as ice sort of guys, Piet even, and, you know, I see Travis becoming that kind of character if he is given the opportunity to expand in the show. You know, we were talking about all those puzzle pieces that go together. One that I left out, and he's a character we didn't talk about in our discussion, but he was featured in this episode, is the Imperial cadet Zare Leonis.
right away, we're seeing his connection with Ezra beginning to pay off. He gave Ezra some very important information, revealed that they could potentially be walking into a trap should they go to the old Republic Senate building to meet up with Travis. So, he also gave Ezra the opportunity to escape the stormtroopers. But yet he's being transferred. So what does that mean for the information feed that he's been giving to Ezra? And does that also mean that we're going to see the show begin to expand off the planet Lothal as it continues to grow into season two? Because we know that Zaer is no longer going to be on planets. We have to assume his character is not going to be abandoned. So I expect the Rebels to be finding some off-planet adventures as season two unfolds. excuse me. Chopper, you know, he's the cute Disney-like character in Rebels, but I love how Paul calls him out is being rather sadistic in his ways. I mean, he's definitely not the cute, friendly character. He's mean even to his friends. So I think it is refreshing and way different than R2-D2. Hera, once again, punching out somebody. She punches Travis in the face this time around. And if you pay close attention to the sound design, you'll hear the same sound being made when she punches him as was made in the last episode when she punched Lando in the junk. So, so I don't know. Make of that whatever you want.
Maybe Paul Lando's asked, junk has a face.
Or maybe Travis's face is...
Oh, okay.
All right, let's move on. Paul, you asked a very intriguing question. Are there characters on the show we're really connecting with individually? And, you know, the character that I feel is the most compelling right now to me is Agent Kallus. That's a character I want to learn more about. You know, the Inquisitor, he seems very driven and very goal-oriented, one thing. But I like Kallus. I like, there's a certain dynamic about him. I love what David Oyelowo brings to the character in his voice acting. And I like to see Kallus being so driven to succeed and ambitious within the Imperial plan. You know, I'd like to see how that's all going to pay off for him. I feel like there's something underneath the surface with Kallus. And if there's ever a character that I think could turn on the Empire, it would be Kallus. And so I'm curious to see if his blind ambition might get a little bit of clarity as his character grows throughout the series. Could he become an eventual future rebel? How cool would that be? What a huge coup that would be for the Rebellion to be able to make Kallus defect. I know nobody's talked about it, and I'm happy to be the first one to do that. That's a little prediction I'm making here on the show. Agent Kallus will defect to the Rebellion. When? I don't know, but I have a feeling.
I'd like to see like a character, if not Lando, then somebody with Lando's kind of gravitas move into the show as a regular. Because for me, it was just kind of like all of a sudden, it was like it really woke me up to the show where I just kind of thought, oh yeah, Lando really brings something that this show needs, and I'm not quite sure what it is. You know, because all the performances are fantastic and the scripts are great and everything, but there's just something about that character. There's some weight to that character that these characters haven't yet earned. And even though, you know, obviously Lando's had a lot less screen time than these characters, really, because we've only had three movies, but we've had a decades and decades worth of EU, and we've had a long time to sort of get to know him, and he's been portrayed by an actor in the flesh in a lot of action movies, so I guess it's kind of got a bit more weight to it. But I'd really like a character that we're that familiar with to kind of come in. I'm not sure who, but I'd settle with a lot more Lando episodes. But I think my interest in the show kind of doubled when he was there. It was like, oh wow.
Well, fear not, Paul. The latest from Cinelinks is that Billy Dee Williams confirmed that, yeah, we're going to see more Lando coming up in Rebels, and he's been recording with the Rebels crew for a year or so.
Wonderful.
So
that's good news.
We're going to get
Because, you know, the character of Lando, he brings so much to Rebels. He brings gravitas, he brings charisma, and he brings a puff a pig.
Yeah, one other little late breaking news here is Jim Cummings was talking to the folks at Salt Lake Comic Con's fan experience just this weekend and said that, yes, I think I'm allowed to tell you I'm back. He's confirming that Hondo Ohnaka will appear in Star Wars Rebels.
Fantastic.
Yep. And that opens the doors. That opens the doors to a lot of characters like Cad Bane and, of course, Ahsoka Tano. So we'll see how this all plays out. So we're going to be seeing connections. That's great news.
Awesome news.
Excellent news. Vision of Hope, a very satisfying episode in terms of actor and character development. I enjoyed it a great deal. Puffer Pig, not in this episode.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. We'll be looking at the episode. What's the name of it? It's called Call to Action. Call to Action will debut on traditional broadcast February 9th, 2015. We'll be here back on Rebels Declassified to break it all down. We'll see you next time. Love you all so much. For Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
Jimmy Mack shredding the vibes.
Working up a sweat.
I always have that image of you playing those vibraphones. Every episode, it just makes me smile.